10-4 VWA, that'd be 4DJW.
And what's happening, Dave? Sorry about that thing on the call the other night. I tell you what, I've been doing battle with AT&T, and it's gotten so bad, I'm going to go ahead and bite the bullet, buy my contract out, and move on, man. I'll tell you what. Yeah. Cell phones are, well, they should be regulated by the mob. That would be better that way.
Something happened while you were transmitting. It's like you turned the mic around and started talking to the back of the mic. You got really muffled. What were you doing?
I don't know. I didn't really change anything. How about now? Is it clear?
Yeah, it's back up now. It's back like it was in the it's like it was in the beginning of your last transmission. So I didn't catch, you know, after about 20 seconds into the first transmission, it went really dim. You saying something about your phone, switching phones, or switching out a contract?
Yeah, it's gotten so bad with AT&T that I'm just going to go ahead and buy out the rest of my contract and just get out of there. I've just got to move on to another service. What I said was the whole phone cell system, as far as marketing, would probably be better off if they had the mob come in and do it. It'd be better.
Well, I'll never get a contract for the phone. I've never had one. I purchased my phone, and then I pay them for service for a month, and then I get service for that month. I pay when I'm done, I'm done. There's no contract. That's the best way to deal with those guys, and there's no hassle.
I agree, but AT&T, when I was trying to get away from Verizon, I took one line over to AT&T just to try them out. That was back in July, and I took one line over, and they talked me into going in with a 5G phone, and, oh, we can do this, and we can give you credits for that, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I went ahead and went on a contract with it. Worst move I've ever made, and yes, I purchased all my other phones also.
Well, what I was telling you last night was to change the subject to something more pleasant. I got that Delta wing working and figured out the mixing in the radio and got it ready to go flying. And then I started working on the TBS Disco, which is a multi-rotor it's not one that you like buy off the shelf and go fly it. You build it. It's home built. It's got a wooden frame, but it's cut out like the TBS, the Team Black Sheep Disco. I don't know if you've seen that one or not, but kind of like a Y shape at top and bottom, and it's got a place for a Hero 4 GoPro to mount in front of it, and it's got an OS on-screen display that tells you how fast you're going, what direction you're going, and it has a transmitter, a VHF transmitter that will transmit a signal back to a ground station so that you can see where it's going, and it's got a heads-up display on top of that tells you the direction and speed and wind speed and battery milliamp hours used and all that kind of stuff. That's where I was when I switched jobs. I was getting all that stuff working, and now I'm having to go back and figure out how all that stuff works again. So that's kind of fun. It's enjoyable. You can program its flight, too. You can put waypoints out there and tell it to go fly those waypoints and come back to you. It's pretty cool.
Sounds challenging. What is the range on that thing? And isn't it nice to have a mental challenge other than work code?
Absolutely it is. You hit the nail on the head there. So it's got so many components. It's got a minimum OSD on-screen display. It's got the 900 megahertz telemetry transmitters. It's got the 2 gigahertz video transmitters and receiver. It's got a receiver for every transmitter. And then it's got the 70 centimeters control, right? The 70 centimeter module that plugs into the back of the JR-10 radio. And it's got its own antenna on the module. And it's got a 70 centimeter receiver. And you can use, they've got dipole antennas. They've got, and you have to have a ham radio license to fly that. It's not just enough to have an FCC license to fly RC. You also have to have a ham radio license because you're using frequencies in the ham band. So, yeah, that's a lot of fun. But I started cracking that thing open about 2 or 3 days ago, and now I've got about 4 or 5 of the components. I remember how I did it. I remember what the switches on the transmitter are to set the pulse width modulation for different flight modes, like loiter. And I could go up to a certain place and you put it in loiter, it'll just stay there. And you can fix the screen on something, you can just sit up there and watch. Or you can put it in altitude hold, which means you're just flying across the ground at the same altitude. It doesn't go up or down. You don't have to stress to control up or down. It'll do that for you. Or it's got stabilize, where all it does is stabilize it so that you control the whole thing, where it goes, how high it is, all that kind of stuff. And then it's got a return to home, and then it's got a land function. And so I'm just figuring out where all those are on the transmitter and how all that works. And it's a blast.
Does it have an auto return? I mean, if something gets crossed up, it, you know, gets code mixed back and forth on something or other, or gets crosstalk on some kind of frequency out there, especially in that ham band, does it have an auto return?
Yeah, so those big bat toggles that are on the top of the transmitter and on the back, they're in the back and they're on the top. And there's one that heads out in each direction. They've got a little bit of slight angle going out. The one on the left, if you pull it forward, no matter what mode you're in, you can be in landing mode, you can be in altitude hold, you can be in stabilize, you can be in auto is the mode that you're in when it's flying its waypoint mission. So whatever they're in, and you toggle the bat toggle that's on the right, gives you two different sets of modes for the toggle that's in front of it, a smaller toggle that's in front of it. That's a three-position toggle. The back position stabilize, the center is like auto, and the forward is land. And then you move the bat toggle behind it forward, and you get three different functions on that same toggle that's in front of it. But the bat toggle that's on the left, on the back, it overrides all of those modes and puts it in return to home. So if you get frustrated or you get lost, but the on-screen display has an arrow that points to home. So you can tell if I go forward and that arrow is not pointed to home, to where home is, you're going away from home or you're going perpendicular to home. But you rotate it till that arrow is pointed back at you, then you push forward stick and up throttle and you're coming home no matter where you are. So it's got a return to home, but it also teaches you how to do return to home. W4DJW.
Okay, and 4VWA. So if you go into toggle overload, all you got to do is go to that one, and you're there. That's great. Now, what you're teaching me here? What is now? Everything operates off of the GPS. What is the accuracy on that? Plus or minus half a meter, or where is that level now?
So the technology that I have on the multirotor, the home-built multirotor that I have, you got to remember that's 5 or 6 years old. And I'm hesitant to modify it because, like, for example, when I brought up Mission Planner, that's the ArduPilot software that you use to set waypoints, and it's got, like, Google Maps behind it. So you can either see the street, the map view or the satellite view, and you can set up your waypoints. So with that software, you can control it. Now, wait a minute, I lost train of thought on what your question was. Let me get back to your question because I kind of drifted there.
What is that accuracy level as far as, you know, percentage with the GPS? Is it half meter, meter, 2 meter?
So that's a function of how many satellites you have lock on. Right, and you can control what you say is locked because it's all programmable. You can say, I've got to have 8 of them, and I'm locked. You can say, I've got to have 8 of them, and they've got to be up off of the horizon by 20 degrees because you can have 8, and if all 8 are under 20 degrees off of the horizon, you get delusion of horizontal precision, which means it's not accurate at all. It can be off by a mile or two if all of your satellites are really low on the horizon. If your satellites are directly overhead, that's the thing, you run into delusion of vertical precision. So it's best to have your satellites that are, you know, above 20 degrees and below 90 degrees, right, or below 80 or 70 degrees. So it's a function of what how many you have and where they are, where the satellites are, as to how precise it is. what DJI did to make they're so strong, holding in the right in the same position all the time and coming back within a foot or two from where they left, is they made it so you have to sit around and wait until it gets that many connections to good position satellites. And that's good. They did that. Plus they put the optical flow sensors in the bottom of it, the LIDAR and the camera. And they can tell what your horizontal speed across. So if you start drifting, they can tell you're starting to drift. And they say, no, I'm not going to let you do that. I'm going to stop that from happening. I don't have the optical flow sensors. I've been studying what it would take to add that because I think that's the difference between purchasing a DJI off the shelf and then being so rock solid versus building your own and it drifting around a little bit because it's only using GPS.
So since you don't have those, you don't have the collision avoidance, do you?
No, but I don't use collision avoidance. I guess it's a nice thing to have. Here's the thing, collision avoidance like doesn't work in some direction, like when you're backing up, or on some of them when you're going sideways. So I think the reason they wanted collision avoidance is because the DJI's got all those modes, the spiral mode, the rocket mode, the wave your arms at it and it does a certain thing. If you're going to do that, you need 300, you need to be in a bubble, right? Well, their bubble was like a half a sphere or a third of a sphere is all it was. So, and it would take a lot to make it a whole bubble, right? And I used to be, I'd fly by a car and I'd have that on and it would stop. I was nowhere near the car, but it would stop its forward motion. That's just frustrating, so I don't use that anymore.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay. Well, that particular function has never really been a problem on my Phantom Pro SE, I've enjoyed mine. Well, look, I've got my motor, I've got my mount and all that good stuff, and I've already done all my aileron horns. I've already mounted all the servos. I'm really, really coming right along. So I'm really hoping to be flying possibly Sunday afternoon. So anytime after about 1 o'clock, if you want to give me a call, maybe you know, if all the parameters fall into place and it's reasonable weather, and you know, we don't have 25-mile-an-hour winds, maybe we can head over there.
Okay, I'll text you when I leave, or I'll ping you. I'll try to get you on the radio here when I'm, or like a half hour before I get ready to leave. I'll just let you know that I'm going to head that way. Or if you're going to do it, you can do the same thing. Did you take off your prop and calibrate your throttle on that new speed controller motor combo?
No. I haven't even taken the speed controller out of the package yet. I've still got to mount the motor, find a position for the batteries. I got to do the CG. There's a lot of stuff I got to do before I get down to that point.
Okay, just read your speed controller directions. Normally, what you have to do before you put a prop on the motor, and after it's mounted to the airplane so it doesn't go flopping all over the table, right? Normally you turn on your transmitter and you put the throttle all the way up to the top. And then when you plug in your battery on your airplane, it'll have the speed controller will have a certain beep sequence that says, yeah, I know, I realize you're wanting to program your throws on your throttle from your radio, because every radio is different on its pulse width modulation from bottom throttle to top throttle. Everyone's different, so it needs to know what yours is. So you put it at full throttle, turn on your radio, put it at full throttle, plug in your airplane, it'll go beep, 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 or whatever its beeping is that tells you that, okay, you're calibrating throttle, and that's your confirmation that it is. Then you bring the throttle all the way down, and then it'll do another beep, and sometimes it'll beep the quantity of cells in the Live Pro, and then it tells you, okay, we're calibrated now. So, and if you don't do that, it may be that when you pull it all the way to bottom throttle, it doesn't shut off all the way. It just keeps going. It's idling a little bit. And idling a little bit with a sharp prop can be dangerous.
This is digital radio. Remember, I've got a Futaba FM at 72.570.
Okay, well, you're still going to have to calibrate it. I mean, it'll be able to pick it up, be able to determine what the pulse width is that it's sending out to it, because that's how it knows where to position the servos. The same mechanism that's used to position the servos is the same mechanism that's used on the speed controller, W4DJW.
KN4VWA. Okay, well, so the beeping you're talking about is going to come from the speed controller?
The speed controller motor combo, the two of them in unison make the beeping sound. I think it's the signals that the speed controller is sending the motor generates what sounds to be like a beep, but it's really just oscillation that you can interpret as a beep.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Good enough. Okay. I'll keep that in mind. See, now, look, as far as electric motors go, this is my first experience out.
That's why I'm trying to remember as much as I can. Safety comes first. It sounds like you made a good selection. You've got the right amperage speed controller. You've got the right size motor. And it sounds like the prop is in the ballpark. You'll learn, you know, props are constantly or something you can work on them from now till doomsday and still not get exactly what you want at top end and bottom end.
Remember under the nitro power when you had the master air screw that looked pretty much just like a regular airplane prop? Well, the props they provided me for the electric have sort of a sweep over the length of them. So I'm assuming that has to do with the efficiency of the blade for that particular application, because I'm not familiar with those.
Yeah, they have a thicker cord and a higher pitch as they get closer to the center of the hub. And then as they go out, they flatten faster and their cord gets a lot smaller. I don't know, it's just the way electric motors work versus... That's a little bit more efficient. If you look at windmills, the big, huge windmills that are out there, that's the way their props are built, too. They've got a really thick cord as they get close to the hub, and then it tapers a lot as it gets out to the tip, and the tip hardly has any pitch at all. Whereas those old master air screw 10-6s, everybody used a 10-6. I mean, that was your starting point. And if you were racing, you used a 9.5-6, right? I forget what, there was one that was one company that went out of business, but they made the prop that everybody wanted that was a 9.5-6, but for a 40 size motor or engine back then, nitro engine. But those were blunter. Those were about the same cord from root to tip, and the pitch stayed about the same. Electrics got a lot more pitch at the root, a lot less pitch at the tip, and a lot more cord at the root and a lot less cord at the tip.
So anyhow, I am on a steep learning curve with the electric, and I'm, like I said, I'm reading up and trying to get there.
Well, I'm in the same way, trying to get back to where I used to be. I'm just trying to catch up with what I used to know. I was thinking, I know there's something in there that puts that screen on top of the screen, and I know there's something in there that sends telemetry back, but it just takes a while. It's been, I think it was 2014, I was looking at some videos in the folder where I had all the files where I was doing that. That was 2014, and this is 2021, so that was 7 years ago almost, going on 7 years ago.
And things change rapidly over that kind of time frame. So are you using over that span of time, was Windows 10 out at that time? I don't believe it was it?
No, it was Windows 7 and 8, I think. Probably Windows 7 back then. 8 probably lived its whole life in between that time, I don't know. 8 lasted for a long time, though.
Yeah, I stepped over 8. It had some issues. So did you have any problem bringing your files forward to 10 on that?
No, when I upgrade, so about every 4 or 5 years, I upgrade to a new Dell server. So I've got my hard drives from my original Dell servers from in the 90s, right? And I just take the hard drive out of the old one and I put it in the new one. and it's a separate drive. And so all of those files that I created are still there. They're just on a different drive. And the drives work just fine. No problem.
Wow. Okay, that's great. Well, listen, I got to jump. I'll be in touch on Sunday. And I'm over here in front of a new provider that I believe I'm going to go to. And the guy just walked up. Wants to know what I want, so let me say 73s, and I will be talking to you soon. I may have to call you with some questions on some of that. Hope you won't mind. So 73s, K and 4 VWA. I'm clear after your final.
No problem. Call anytime. Just I may not answer, but I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Have a good one. Good talking to you. K and 4 VWA, W4DJ, W clear.